Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 24th of Adar. And today we get to meet Rav Shulam Raff, who I don't think we've seen together before. He wrote a shit called Kol Mevaser, and this is going to be a responsum from the 24th of Adar, Tafshin Yud Bet of 1952. It's from the first volume from the 21st responsum. But a little bit about his life story. He was from an important rabbinic family. He was born in 1875 in Poland. He was known as a child prodigy, ordained at the age of 18. He was a Rav in Romania. He was an active Zionist in Europe. And then the Bar Ilan says he immigrated to Israel in 1949. When I looked him up in the Hebrew Wikipedia, it seems like that might not be the accurate date, that he was in Hungary during the war, and then when Hungary got invaded, or he was someplace else, he was in Czernowitz, he got taken to Hungary, and then from Hungary he got smuggled to Israel in 1944 when the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, got to Hungary. In any case, whenever it happened, he reached Eretz Israel, and he became an active member of the chief rabbinate in Israel until he passed away in 1963. He was eventually on the Supreme Rabbinical Court, and he was an important rav. It's a piece of these things that there are these rabbanim who are in discussion, like in the early parts of the state of Israel, there were these important rabbanim who had come from Europe who were relatively old already, so they weren't like in the leadership necessarily, but they were significant talachic figures as part of the early state, and they were there, and they were like an old part of Europe. It's just a thing to sort of think about. So in any case, he was asked by Rav Yehuda Lev Maimon, who was an ordained rabbi, but he was more prominent as an Orthodox politician in the early state. And he was asked about saying Shechiyanu on Yom HaAtzmaut. So this is a topic that continues into our time. Should we say a bracha on Shechiyanu? Should we say it at all? So he wants to know, should we say a bracha? And then a bracha on the Hallel? That's one question. And then there's going to be a bracha of Shechiyanu on Yom HaAtzmaut. Should we just say a Shechiyanu on the holiday, as it were? Right? And so Yom HaAtzmaut is the day that the state of Israel was declared. So Rav Shulam Roth starts with the fact that there should be no doubt. And when you see an important rabbinic figure, now he was a Zionist, so that might already color his judgment, but an important rabbinic figure who's got a mastery of much of halakhic literature, nobody has a mastery of all of halakhic literature, but has a mastery of significant portions of halakhic literature, and is, you know, on the chief rabbinic council, and is a rav of standing, when he says things, certain things unequivocally, it's always worth paying attention. So he says there's no doubt that the 5th of Iyar, which the government decided and the members of the Knesset decided, should be a holiday to celebrate the independence of the state of Israel. He puts in parentheses when he talks about Chevrei HaKnesset, Shehem Nivcherei Rov HaTzibor, that they are the people chosen by the majority of the community. This is an element of the Knesset to think about, that it was accepted by rabbinic figures. That around the same time, I'm reading the Tzitzil Yezer's Hilchot Medina, and he has similar ideas about the Knesset. They are representatives of the community. So as representatives of the community, when they make when they establish a date, that has significance. And he writes also Rov Gdolei Rabbanim, most of the rabbis, of the important rabbis, have agreed that's the day to celebrate. And then he writes Zecher Lenes, to commemorate the miracle of our Tshuatenu V'Chirutenu, of our salvation and our freedom. And we can get so inured, so jaded to the existence of the state of Israel, we can take it so for granted, we can forget the excitement of what it was, even though back then it was much less secure than it is now. And he's saying the fact that we got a state is a remarkable thing. Mitzvah l'asotosim chav yom tov, it's got to be a holiday. And he doesn't mean a holiday like cessation of labor, he doesn't mean a holiday in the formal sense of a Pesach, but it's got to be a holiday in a time of joy, because Hashem did this great thing for us, v'lomar halel, to sing a praise to Hashem. So we're going to get to it. That's what he means exactly by halel and a bracha and all this. But he says this is connected to a general principle, even a community in a particular city, or individuals who are saved by Hashem, there's a long tradition of establishing a Yom Tov holiday for themselves, for a miracle that was done for them, and they keep it, and they keep it for themselves and their children until forever. And even if they move to a different city, now move to a different city is an important point, because often, there are many minhagim which are really a function of the city in which you live. Today we've sort of lost sight of that, which is why it doesn't sound as surprising as it really is, or important to remember as it is, because we've gotten so used to the idea that, no, we just keep all of our customs, that they're personal. But really, many, many customs were assumed to be not a matter of personal, but a matter of place. So he says, but these people, if it's a private thing, you know, so I know, for example, there's a practice called in the Frimmer family, so the brothers Frimmer, Rabbi Aryeh Frimmer and Rabbi Dov Frimmer, one is a lawyer and one is a chemist, I think. And they write articles on halakhic topics, and they're, you know, both Torah scholars, and one's a lawyer and one's a chemistry professor. But their father, Norman Frimmer, Alav Shalom, was in a terrorist attack, a hostage situation in the early 1970s in Washington, D.C., and they established a family holiday, which they call Purim Frimmer, and as far as I know, they still celebrate to this day. So that idea of various Purims, I think I'm pretty sure that Frankfurt had a Purim until that could that city was destroyed, you know, the time of the Nazis, but they had a Purim. That idea that when we have a holiday that happens, a miracle that happens, a salvation that happens to a person, to a family, to a community, they establish a holiday, and the Maram al-Shakar agreed with that, and he held that, and the Mogen Avraham reports it in Tuf Resh Pei Vav, and the Chatzim Sofer and Or HaChaim thought that, says that there are several communities that do such a thing, and he writes there, that it's based on the Gemara and Megillah. The Gemara and Megillah, when it's talking about setting up Purim, the Purim that we all celebrate as a holiday. So the Gemara talks about whether it's only Mimita L'Chaim, from death to life, which was the case with Mordechai and Esther, or whether it's also for Avdus L'Chayrut. I'm sorry, say it around. The Gemara says, we say Hallel when we leave Egypt, so that's Avdut L'Chayrut. There was no threat to our lives in Egypt. It was leaving slavery to freedom. So with Mordechai and Esther, where they were leaving a threat of death to life, mita l'chayim, all the more so that they should establish a holiday. So the Chasam Sofer held that should mean that as long as we're still in exile, we're not being saved from slavery to freedom, and then it means that being saved from mita l'chayim is also not a complete salvation. He thought, and therefore we should probably not establish extra holidays. But if it's the whole Jewish people, now says Rav Shulam Roth, that's the Chasam Sofer, but if the whole Jewish people, says Rav Shulam Roth, and we went from Avdus L'Cheirus, what's the sense we go from slavery to freedom? He says, Shini Alnu Mishubud Malkiel. We've been saved from the oppression of other nations. And that's a really interesting point, because that idea of Shibud Malkiel is what the Rambam says. Rav Shulam Roth doesn't refer to it here, I'm just putting in a parenthetical comment, that Shibud Malkut is what the Rambam gave as the characteristic of Mashiach. So I don't know for sure, but it seemed to me possible that Rav Shulam Roth really saw it as part of the advent of the time of the Mashiach, because we had Jewish leaders who were taking out of Shibud Malkut, of being ruled by the other nations. Now, personally, I'm not sure that's quite true, because we're still ruled in some sense by our obligations to not have other nations be upset with us, meaning the state of Israel today can't really just go its own way. It has to worry about Russia a little bit, it has to worry about America a little bit, it has to worry about Germany, it has to worry about not ruffling feathers too much. But he's saying, but we were made into B'nai Chorin, which has some truth to it for sure, right? We were made independent, and we got political independence, and also he says it's really from Mita L'Chaim, we also went from death to life from the enemies who means the Arab nations around the state of Israel at the time, who were trying to destroy them. Now for that one, theoretically the date of 5 ER is not the appropriate date, because they hadn't guaranteed themselves that they weren't going to be killed by the Arab nation on the 5th of ER. Some of the war started after the 5th of ER. Much of the war had already been fought before, but some of the war was after the 5th of ER, when the actual nations could invade. That was the date that he chose, and he says that he thinks that they chose the date right, that they chose this date, because that was the essential miracle, that by virtue of declaring their independence, that's when things happened, meaning that's when the United States recognized the State of Israel, and then other countries recognized the State of Israel. And all of that brought certain diplomatic realities with it, and that meant certain things, etc. So he's saying he thinks the 5th of Iyar was a fine choice for those reasons, because the declaration of the independence, there was a whole discussion at the time about whether they should or shouldn't declare. There were those who said you should wait to declare, and he's saying the declaration was what led to all the events that produced the leaving from slavery, meaning from being completely ruled over by the British in that case, but by nations in general, as well as the safety, the salvation from death from the invading Arab nations. And it's also true, he says, that it saves the Jews of the rest of exile. And that's another piece of it that people sometimes fail to notice, that that the status of Jews outside of Israel has also been affected by the existence of a state of Israel. The fact that there is a state of Israel, the fact that the state of Israel will sometimes intervene on behalf of Jewish communities, the fact that the state of Israel is a place where Jews can go if their local homeland, their local lands that they're living in, are not hospitable to them anymore, all of that has provided some help. He is writing in 52, so he doesn't know yet about the Soviet Jewry movement, but that was the state of Israel played a role and a function in that, and certainly eventually took in many, many, many Jews from the former Soviet Union. And but in his time, we're already talking about Jews from Ethiopia. Jews from Yemen and other Arab countries. So you say that it's a place for them to come to now, and they came to Eretz Israel. And that was true for Jews from Germany and refugees from the Holocaust and all of that. You had a third miracle, right? So you had going out of Avdus to Chayrus, from slavery to political independence. You had from death to life in this. Jews who avoided or were able to repel the Arab invasions. And then you also had a kibbutz galiot, a third miracle of Jews being gathered in, which has only increased since then in remarkable numbers. He doesn't refer to Yemenite Jewry, so I'm not sure if he knew that had already happened. I think it had already happened by 52. And then eventually you had a Russian Jewry, and then you had an Ethiopian Jewry, and you have all, and you have more, and you have Jews continuing it, you know, v'chahina v'chahina, as the phrase goes. We should hope for more and more of it, and that's a third miracle. So all these miracles together, he says, started with the declaration of the fifth Iyar, and that for sure it was a good and inspired choice to choose the fifth Iyar as when the Jews, as when we celebrate these miracles. Then the Marshal seems to have felt differently. The Marshal seems to have felt, in the Gemara in Megillah, he says that when it came to establishing the miracle of Chanukah, they found a remez in the Torah, they found a hint in the Torah. Without that, they couldn't have added any kind of a holiday to the Jewish calendar. And the Maharaj, but the Rav Shlomo Roth says, I don't understand what he's talking about, because we don't need a hint in the Torah, because we have this Kal V'Chomer in the Gemara. When the Gemara wants to say that you can establish a Purim, because if we say Hallel for having left Egypt, which was a matter of slavery, then certainly for a matter of having been saved from death, that's all the more so. So if you have that Kal V'Chomer, and a Kal V'Chomer, says Rav Shlomo Roth, is one of the Gimel Midot Torah Nidreshet by him. This is a side topic that only comes up by the way here, so I won't go into it at length, but it's a reminder that there certainly was a time, and Rav Shlomo Roth is saying there, it might still be true now, and I think he certainly would imply that there will be in the future a time when rabbis of the proper qualifications and knowledge, not just anybody, but when rabbis can look at the Torah with fresh eyes and using certain principles of how one does or doesn't read the Torah, can come to conclusions that will look new, but they are proper and appropriate extensions of what's implicit in the Torah by virtue of these rules of derivation. And one of those clear rules of derivation is the Kal V'Chomer. I think there's a Rashi somewhere that says the Kal V'Chomers are only done by tradition, but I think the general assumption is that that's not true. The Kal V'Chomer's arguments a fortiori are learned by one's own intellect, such as this one here. If we know that the Jews sang Shira and said Hallel and celebrated leaving slavery for freedom, all the more so for leaving a threat of death and continuing into life. So the Rav Shlomo Roth says, I don't understand why the Maharsha would think that for the purposes of Chanukah, you needed a derivation from the Torah, hint in the Torah. And so too in the Ritva, it says there, Diner Chanukah, even though it says Eilah Mitzvot, there's a Pasuk that says Eilah Mitzvot, these are the Mitzvot, and there's a inference that means we can't add to the Torah afterwards. The Ritva says, now the Ritva's a Rishon, the Ritva says, yeah, but they have this idea that just like they said about Purim, that 48 prophets, when they were talking about Purim, said, yeah, but we have a Kal V'Chomer, we have this argument that lets us establish the holiday of Purim. So they showed that all of that is not considered an addition to the Torah. They're either a gether, and he says a gether, the Ritva says a gether and a siag Torah. They're helping out the Torah. So he thinks that he doesn't understand the Maharsha for that reason. So he also has a Mikas Chinuch, who says a similar kind of an idea, that Chanukah is not a problem of Baal Tosif because it happened by a miracle, and we have this tradition based on this Kal V'Chomer derivation that when miracles happen, we have the right to establish holidays to commemorate them and to celebrate them and to thank Hashem for them, even for individuals. And that's a Ritva that we just said, and there's a Ramban in the Sefer HaMitzvot in Shoresh Bet. Right at the beginning of the Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam had his explanation for how he understood what constitutes a mitzvah in the Torah, because the Torah says lots and lots of things in commanding tones. So it's not true that every time the Torah says do this or don't do this, it necessarily qualifies as one of the 613 mitzvot. So in order to deal with that, Rambam had an introduction of 14 principles of how he decides whether a verse in the Torah is or is not a principle of the Torah. And the Ramban then commented on those, because part of the Rambam's not so hidden agenda was that he disagreed with the way the Baal Halachot Gedolot, who lived 300 years before Rambam, the Rambam disagrees with how he counted the 613, and the Ramban decides to defend the Baal Halachot Gedolot. So he has hasagot, he has glosses on the Mishneh Torah. And so in Shoresh Bet, on the gloss of Shoresh Bet, he also talks about this idea that you can establish a holiday based on a miracle by virtue of the comparison to Purim. So when it comes to Hanukkah, also you don't have that problem. Therefore, tier two, any community or even individual has a miracle happen to them. Not only can they establish a commemorative day, but it's a mitzvah to do so. It's an expression of their recognition that Hashem saved them, and therefore they're fulfilling a mitzvah, as the Chasam Sofer himself says. And there's no problem about Tosif. Chasam Sofer, in fact, writes that it was a doraita mama. She thinks that since a kal vachomer, this kind of an argument, kal vachomer, I keep saying this word a fortiori, which I only know because I once came across it, and I thought it would be cool to memorize it so I could speak English instead of mixing my English with my Hebrew. But the idea of a kal vachomer is that if I teach you some minimal principle, all the more so a more severe thing. So if I tell you that you shouldn't take one step into X room, then certainly you shouldn't take two steps, right? Because two steps is more than one step. That's a kal vachomer. It's if I tell you the lighter principle, all the more so the more stringent principle. That's what we're going here, right? If I tell you that Hallel is said when leaving slavery for freedom, all the more so that it's from leaving death to life, since life is even more than just the question of slavery versus freedom. So that's a kal vachomer. And that, Chasam Sofer says, is a doraita thing. I mean, when we derive kal vachomers, when we have kal vachomers in the Gemara, those halachot, which are derived out of a kal vachomer, are assumed to be doraita halachot. They're assumed to be Torah law. So that's because the Torah, when it gave us the Torah, also gave us the hermeneutical principles, and that what we derive from there is, so that's Chasam Sofer saying that it's a doraita mamash. That gets to the discussion of Yom HaTzur as we have it here. It comes up in Yom Yerushalayim, it comes up in lots of places as to whether or not there's a Torah obligation to establish certain kinds of holidays. Now, one issue with this discussion is that we're drawing this kal vachomer from Pesach, but on Pesach it's not clear what song they sang. Rashi on the Gemara in Megillah, I'd say they sang Shir Alayam, right? We have Az Yashir. But the problem with Az Yashir is the Tur Evan questioned is that that's not an obligation the Dor wrote. That's not a permanent obligation. So that you Kal Vachomer, one of the rules of Kal Vachomer is you can only derive that which was established in the original case. So it's hard to say that that the original case of Pesach can teach you that you say Hallel on Purim or Shira of some sort, or you establish holidays to celebrate things, or on Hanukkah, right? Because of a Kal Vachomer, because they didn't have a Shira. And therefore, the Tu'ei Avin claimed, no, the Shira that we're talking about is the Hallel on the first day of Pesach. And there's Gemara in Pesachim and Kuf Yud Zayin that says something like that you had a bunch of Nevi'im, that the Nevi'im who lived there established it, established for the Jewish people the Shira on any trouble or problem that arose. That would be one way of reading. Now, that's okay for the Ramban elsewhere in the Sefer Mitzvot, in his gloss to the first one of the Rambam's Shorashim, the first one of the Rambam's roots of principles of how you derive things. He holds that Hallel on Yom Tov is Doraita. But the Shagas Aryeh, who's an Achron who was more ready than many to argue with Rishonim if you thought they were wrong, he felt he had proved that even that Hallel on Yom Tov is a Derabbanan, and that matters for Hallel purposes and for holiday purposes. Let's say you don't know if you said Hallel on a certain day, or let's say you got something wrong, whether you not have to go back and read it again, and you're not sure. So he said, you don't, because it's Derabbanan. So where's the Hallel? So that's a problem for our discussion, because we're deriving our idea of Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut from the idea of Hallel on Pesach, right? We're saying Purim came from Pesach, but where do you get it on Pesach from? So the Shagas Aryeh claim that it's the Hallel we say at the first night of Pesach. Some say it in Shul, but everybody says it at the Seder. He holds that Doraita, and that's where and then that Torah requirement to say Hallel is a function of having been saved from slavery, and then that can serve as the grounding and the basis for the Kal Vachomer. However you get it, you know, you see a discussion that goes on, and that discussion has others who have written on it as well, but that's as far as we're going to go with here, and as far as he goes with it here, you get the halacha that there's no doubt of Baal Tosef. There's no problem, Baal Tosef, of adding to the Torah, of adding a mitzvah of our own volition, which we're not allowed to do. It's not that at all. We have a long tradition that when things happen, even to individuals, let alone to communities, let alone to the entire Jewish people, and part of what he's saying is that this was a salvation that really occurred to the entire Jewish people, even though theoretically it only did it for the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, even just 4 years' time since then had shown that it was really a worldwide event, and it really mattered to worldwide Jewry, and therefore when you have salvations for the whole Jewish people, not only is it not Baal Tosef, it is a chiyuv and a mitzvah, it is an obligation and a commandment. And the Torah Hashem has told us, through what we saw commanded about Pesach night, to make a commemoration of the miracle, to establish the day, so he calls it a Yom Ha'atzmaut, to make it a Yom Tov, of Simcha, of joy, and to say Hallel without skipping, meaning to say a full Hallel. Now that's true of the Hallel, but in terms of Birchat Hallel, in terms of saying a bracha on the Hallel, so now we're making something new, and it's been 2,000 years of exile, even though I hold that everything I wrote was clear, and I hold that it's halachically, you know, valid. Well, l'maaseh, but in practice, if I'm going to establish halal with a bracha, he thinks I shouldn't establish this on my own, and we should consult with the majority of the great rabbis, and you should have discussions about it. Now, that obviously didn't happen, meaning I don't think there's been any consensus that you make a bracha on halal. I think there are many who hold that you make a bracha on halal, but there are many who hold you don't, and this idea of establishing consensus never occurred. It is something that I've noted before about Rav Uziel. He was always in favor of trying to get Gedolei HaRabbanim together to agree on things. Unfortunately, we have not yet achieved that, which would be a signal achievement for the Jewish people, to have Gedolei HaRabbanim from all sort of walks of life be able to get together and work out ways for things to work. So he says, so that being true, I want to consult with them because there's a problem of lo titgodutu. I don't want to create divisions in the Jewish people. There is a pasuk in the Torah of lo titgodutu, which is really about tearing one's skin in mourning, but was taken by the Gemara to also include that the Jewish people are not allowed to create divisions unnecessarily among them. The definition of necessarily is clearly an issue. They also say, well, I'm not doing it unnecessarily, but you're not supposed to try to create divisions. That being true, and comes to the question of Hallel, of being a bracha on the Hallel, he thinks you want to get as many great rabbis together as possible to make a common consensus, if we can get one, about the bracha, and if everybody agrees, you make a bracha on Hallel. The other issue, so he's clear you should say Hallel, whole Hallel. He's not as clear about a bracha, even though he thinks it's okay to make a bracha. He thinks you need more of a consensus. And then he gets to the question of, what about a Shechiyanu on Yom HaTzimut? Now, I confess that until I came across this tshuva, I don't think I had ever heard of it or seen it. And I grew up in what we would call Zionistic circles. But now I grew up among people who said a full challah with a bracha on Yom HaTzimut, and where we had celebrations, always was very careful to have a celebration and a party and dancing and whatever it is to really show our appreciation of Hakamat HaMedina, the establishment of the state of Israel. But he was being asked about a Shechiyanu. So he says the simple reading of the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch would seem to be that when it comes to Chanukah, it's only the person who lights the candles on Chanukah or who sees candles lit on Chanukah who would say a Shechiyanu. But, he says, the Meiri writes that if somebody doesn't have any candles to light, and he's not in a place where he's going to see any candles, that there are those who say he would just say Shasta Nisim, the Bracha, Shasta Nisim Lavoteinu, and Shechiyanu on the first night. And the Meiri seems to think that's okay. He says, Vadvarim Nir'im. He seems to agree. So that would suggest that you can have Shechiyanu on the day, that you say Shechiyanu for having lived again to the time when we celebrate this thing. When it comes to Purim, the Magen Avraham had written that, so we ordinarily make a Shechiyanu on Purim at night on Kriyat HaMegillah, on reading the Megillah, and then during the day we make it again on the Brachot of the day. Magen Avraham writes, what about if you don't have a Megillah? So he says, you shouldn't make a Shechiyanu just on Mishloach Manot and Seudah, because that we have every day. Meaning, it's not clear in Purim terms that those justify a Shechiyanu of their own because they're not occasional practice. They're a daily practice. Now, I'm not sure that Mishloach Manot is a daily practice. Seudah is a daily thing. Some bigger, some smaller Seudah don't, but it's a daily thing. But Mishloach Manot, I'm not so clear about. The Magen Avraham, however, said that. And therefore, he said, in other words, if you didn't have, so when we make the Shechiyanu, I think it's because we have a Kriyat Megillah that we're making it, and we have a reading of the Megillah that we're making it on, and then we can apply it to the mitzvahs of the day, and the reading of the day, I think, is the more essential one, and therefore we can apply it in that way. But if you didn't have a Megillah, you don't just make a She'achyanu. But the Rav Yaakov Emden in Mor Ktzia disagreed. And he said it may be true that the practices of sending mishloach manot, sending food to friends, and of having a large seuda to celebrate the day don't themselves deserve a She'achyanu, but the Rav Yaakov Emden said he thinks the day of Purim gets a She'achyanu because of the miracle that happened, like all other holidays. And therefore, the Rav Yaakov Emden says that even if you don't have a Megillah, you make a She'achyanu on the day of Purim. And the Mishneh Berurah suggested, meaning he basically agreed with Yaakov Emden, he suggested that maybe the Magen Avraham only meant it in terms of a person who had a Megillah the night before. He read Megillah, he heard Megillah read the night of Purim from a Megillah, and there a She'achyanu was said. And so since She'achyanu was said, and the next morning he doesn't have a Megillah available to him, that's where the Magen Avraham said, well, just the mitzvot of Mishloach Manot and giving and having a seuda and presumably giving extra tzedakah, right? Those things can't produce a She'achyanu, and you've already made, Mishneh Berurah's point is implying, and you've already made a She'achyanu on the day. And since you've already made a She'achyanu on the day, you don't make another She'achyanu. But if they had never had a Megillah, maybe he would agree with Yaakov Emden. So that would mean that it seems like special days, important holidays that come up, we make a She'achyanu on. So he had already discussed, I skipped before, Prichada seemed to think you don't make a She'achyanu on a day like this, but the Miri thought you did. Now the Miri was a Rishon, but not a well-established Rishon, but usually also in Halacha, we say Halacha Kibatrai. We say that the later authorities, when they say something, rule. Now mostly later authorities won't contradict earlier authorities, but if later authorities do in fact disagree with earlier ones, we follow later authorities because we hold that they're more aware of, you know, more current, more contemporary conditions. But in the case of the Prichadash of Shlomo Roth, he doesn't think that principle applies because the Prichadash didn't know the Miri. He didn't have that available. The Miri's manuscripts were lost for many centuries. So many, many important Torah scholars never knew the Miri's writings, except for some of them on Pirkei Avot and things like that. So if that's true, maybe if he'd seen the Miri, he would have changed his mind. That won't be the determining factor. Yaakov Emden and others in the Baal Mishneh Berurah all seem to think that the She'achyanu comes on a day. So therefore, it would seem like they hold hell that we could do that. We could do that for Yom HaTzimut as well, especially if, says Rav Shlomo Roth, especially if we do it just before Hallel, because then there's some thought that the mitzvah of Hallel itself deserves She'achyanu because it doesn't come so often, and therefore you could say it on the Hallel itself. The Ran, however, in a different discussion in Sukkah, had held that's exactly the other way around. That when it comes to Hallel, it's not a mitzvah that comes periodically, or that's not the definition of it, because we'd say a Hallel for every time of distress from which we're saved, so he calls it Ein Zmanu Kavua. It doesn't have a set time, and things that don't have a set time, we don't make a She'achyanu. Why not? Because the bracha of She'achyanu is She'achyanu v'kimanu v'giyanu lazmanazah, to this time. But if a Hallel is something that was said in reaction to, even if you're not going to establish a holiday for it, in reacting to a moment of salvation, you'll say a hallel, right? Just for that one year, even if it's not deemed significant enough to be made into a hallel, but just for that one year, you say a hallel, so that won't be a time issue. Therefore, the Ran held that you wouldn't make a She'achyanu on hallel. So in general, the truth is, says Rav Shlomo Roth, we would avoid brachos that we're not sure you have to make, because we have a general principle that because bracha levatala, making an unnecessary bracha, is such a significant problem, that we try to avoid it, such that if there's a disagreement, we generally tend to follow the opinion that you don't make a bracha because you don't want to run into a situation of a bracha levatala, a bracha that's unnecessary. That would have meant, therefore, here, we theoretically shouldn't make a bracha on the hallel, as he said already, and we theoretically shouldn't say She'achyanu, as he said already. But the Bach in Orach Chaim wrote that She'achyanu is different. And the reason that he held She'achyanu is different is meaning that even if there's a dispute about whether to say it, we would say it anyway, because, says the Bach, She'achyanu is a bracha that's a function of simchat libo shel adam, of the joy that resides in the heart of a man, of a human being. So if somebody is feeling joyful, he can make a She'achyanu, meaning the Bach is saying, you can have a debate about whether this practice, this mitzvah, this halakha requires a She'achyanu. But the Bach says, independent of the question of what requires a She'achyanu, if somebody feels the joy that would stir a She'achyanu, that's the way She'achyanu works. Then you could say, well, why can't I do that for any bracha? The answer is that not all brachos function that way. So just to say, well, I feel joy, and therefore I'm going to make a bracha on the recitation of halal, right? Like, can't do that, because that's not what the bracha is. The bracha is a designation of a certain halal as being required by halakha. It's not an expression of personal joy. It's just a birchat mitzvah on the halal, and therefore there's a debate about whether that halal is a mitzvah or not. You'd say, we follow the lenient opinion when it comes to brachas, because we're afraid of bracha levatala. The bracha is saying, shekhianu is different that way, and the shekhianu is a bracha on certain practices, but it's also an expression of personal joy. And so that in any situation where that personal joy is there, then the bracha levatala issue goes away. And many achronim agreed with the bach about this, the Bilya Rabbah and the Tzlak and the... Yeah, is who he quotes, that when you have permission to say Shiyana when you're feeling that way. And the Chasam Sofer concluded his discussion in saying that when Chazal said Bracha to Shiyana is a reshut, it's up to people to say it whether they want to or not. He said it's not like anybody can say it whenever they want to for any reason. That's ridiculous. That's just Bracha Levatala. That's a Bracha with no purpose to it. What it means is, says the Chasam Sofer, anybody who got pleasure or benefit from something which deserves a bracha, and you can't get benefit from life or from the world without blessing and thanking Hashem for those things, so it doesn't need a particular, so for most things it needs a shear, right? If I'm going to eat an apple and I'm going to make a bracha after eating the apple, I have to have a shear, or I have to have eaten a certain amount, and there are designations in halakha, and there are things where even if I say, well, I got joy out of it or I got pleasure out of it, that's not the halakha, because we establish these things as general rules and general principles, and therefore it depends on what people in general do. But when it comes to Shekhianu, says the Chatam Sofer, if somebody knows about themselves that they're getting a pleasure from Hashem and from the joy and the salvation they had, then the bracha isn't a reshut. It's not a matter of you can do it if you want to. It's an obligation. So if you know that you're getting the benefit and you don't make a bracha, then you're a chote. It's not just that you could have made a bracha and you didn't, it's that you got benefit when the general principle is these kinds of benefits you have to bless Hashem for and make the bracha of Shekhianu. That's the Chatam Sofer, and the Rishon LeRoth thinks it's very beautiful, and he thinks that applies here. It's kind of interesting because I don't think anybody thinks of the Chatam Sofer as having been a Zionist. At his time, there wasn't such a thing as Zionist, but I think most people assume the Chatam Sofer was in a more traditionalist wing of the Jewish people, and therefore that he would not have been somebody who would have embraced what eventually became Zionism. I think that's what it assumes. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying I think most people assume that, and yet here Rishon LeRoth is pointing out that some of the things the Chatam Sofer in his own context about his own things would serve to say exactly what we're going to say here, that when it comes to halacha here, says Rav Shlomo Roth, you can't make a halacha that you have to say Shekhianu on Yom HaTzmaut, but if somebody wants to, they have permission to. And there's no problem with Bracha Levatala. Why not? Because it's an expression of one's joy, and anybody who knows about himself that he got pleasure and simcha when the state of Israel was declared, it's not a permissible bracha, it's an obligatory bracha, because that's what the bracha is. It's to celebrate these kinds of things. And it's better then, though, to put the Shekhianu close to saying the Hallel, meaning if you're going to say a Hallel with a bracha before, he says before the bracha, which is kind of interesting, because we usually don't do it that way. Like when we're going to make a Shekhianu mitzvah, we usually make a bracha on the mitzvah and the Shekhianu after that. He's saying put the Shekhianu before it, because it's not a Shekhianu on the Hallel as so much, but it's right there. So I think he's saying that by connecting it to the Hallel, you make it clear that the same celebration that's going to be expressed in the Hallel is expressed by your bracha of the Shekhianu. I think he doesn't make that clear, but if you're not going to make the bracha on Hallel, you just say it right before the Hallel, and then he closes with a bracha and a prayer that Kadosh Baruch Hu will give us a full geula, a full redemption, and will see us with compassion. So that is Rav Shlomo Roth on the 24th of Adar of Tufshin Yibben, 1952, laying out for us the kinds of brachos we should be making, the kinds of reactions we should be having to Yom HaTzmaut. Have a great day.